Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Pursuit of Happiness by D.A. Young. Narrated by Sean Crisden and Murray Brehon. Prologue. Whiskey Row, Tennessee. Darby anxiously waited on the bench near the bicycle rack at the back entrance of his high school. He listened as the final bell rang, signaling the school day's end, and looked down at the single pink rose in his large hands. Darby shook his head in disbelief, knowing that if his friends or brothers could see him, big, badass Darby Sullivan, shaking in his boots as he waited to ask a girl to the prom, they'd give him shit for the rest of his life. She wasn't just any girl, though. No, sir, she was Mariah Devereaux, the prettiest girl in school, who only had eyes for Darby, the wild child of the tainted Sullivan family. Just thinking about her choosing him blew his mind. And it all started, innocently enough. They had third period Spanish class together, and Mariah was struggling in the class. Even though he liked to act like he couldn't care less about his education, Darby had the highest grade in the class. Mariah came from a well-off family where her parents could have afforded a tutor, but instead, to everyone's surprise, she asked for Darby's help. Reluctantly, Darby agreed to do it, only because the teacher offered to write him a letter of recommendation for college. Tutoring took place in the classroom 3 times a week after school let out. Mariah made Darby extremely nervous with her sweet smiles that caused his stomach to flip-flop every time she gave him one, and her slight touches always caused Darby to break out in goosebumps. Her tropical-inspired perfume lingered on his clothes long after they parted ways, and at night in bed, Darby jacked off as he thought about Mariah's big blue eyes, long, straight black hair, and pert little figure. Darby was far from a virgin and hadn't been one in 3 years. His first time had been with Alexei's housekeeper's granddaughter, Anya, who was visiting from Ukraine for the summer. The 15-year-old vixen with long, pale blonde hair and slender, nubile body had shown up in Darby's bedroom one afternoon while everyone else was down at the swimming hall. He'd been home on punishment for riding his bike off Alexei's roof. Anya said she came by to keep him company, but ended up riding and sucking Darby's dick that afternoon and everyone after for the rest of her 2-week visit. Her next summer visit, Anya introduced him to good old-fashioned pussy-eating and anal sex. He loved her lack of inhibitions, patience, and adventure. She was an excellent teacher, and Darby knew he'd graduated at the top of her class when he made Anya shout out that she loved him as she came with tears in her eyes. Sadly, that was her last visit, as she got knocked up the following winter, and her parents quickly married her off. After that, it seemed that all the girls could sense his experience and were dying to get next to him. But he found himself only drawn to sophisticated older women. Thus, he got a job at the Miramar Resort, and worked as a pool boy during the summer and a bellboy during winter. The women were abundant and always willing to give advice on how to please them. Tips were good, sex was plentiful, and he was living a pretty good life. The little girls in the row could do nothing for him, and he wasn't even tempted by them. Until now. Mariah, with her wide-eyed gaze and sweet smile, scared him senseless. The first time they kissed 3 weeks ago, he was in the middle of explaining a verb in Spanish to her when she suddenly leaned in and pressed her small mouth to his. He'd been stunned as her sweet breath washed over his face, and his dick turned hard enough to drill through the school roof. It was the quickest of kisses, but it left him reeling and wanting more. Afterwards, she pulled back with a starry-eyed expression and pleaded, "Please don't be mad, Darby. I've been wanting to do that ever since you said hello to me." "She's innocent. Don't scare her," he chanted to himself as he fought the urge to throw her on the table and pound into her pussy like a maniac. "Don't scare her."
"Nah, that's cool,"
he said stupidly and cringed at how his voice almost cracked. Then she smiled and did it again. Her lips pressed into his with a sweet clumsiness, and Darby found himself falling for her. After that, in the following weeks after their tutoring session was over, he found himself exchanging chaste kisses with her and never going past first base for fear of scaring her. Darby found out quickly that being a goddamn gentleman was really fucking hard. Now, here he was, waiting to surprise her because she'd hinted at wanting to go to the prom, and Darby was about to break his cardinal rule of going solo to a dance just to make her happy. He couldn't wait to see the look on her face when he asked her. His best friend, Ginger, said he was crazy and insisted that he didn't know the real Mariah, but he figured she was just a little jealous, because he hadn't been spending as much time with her as she'd like. As students filed out of the double doors, he waited, hidden by the stairwell, until he heard his name mentioned by a boy. The voice belonged to Lance Lewis, and he was talking to Mariah. Darby's fingers clenched as he remembered what the spoiled little asshole had done to Ginger last spring.
"Looks like you got Sullivan eating out of the palm of your hand as planned, Mariah. You're certain he'll go for it?"
"What the hell?" Darby's heart started beating erratically in his chest as he heard a girl's jeering laugh. Then he heard Mariah's voice, only now it wasn't as baby soft as it was when she was with him. It was grown-ass woman confident.
"Darby Sullivan is like putty in my hands, baby. He's so inexperienced. Hell, sometimes I feel like I'm with my kid brother. Why, he barely knows how to kiss. I will get him to take me to prom, and when I do, you owe me a pair of Charles David heels. They'll look so good on me when I'm riding you with nothing else on, lover."
Quietly, Darby stood up, and his height enabled him to see Lance, Mariah, and their friends from the football team and cheerleading squad gathered around them as they talked shit about him.
"I can't believe you got him trained like that,"
another girl added, enviously.
"Aren't you scared he might try to hurt you or something? All that dirty blood running through him?"
"Nah, he's not like that. He's more like that big stupid ape in that movie, you know?"
Mariah snapped her fingers as she tossed her hair over her shoulder and her eyes danced with spite.
"He's like King Kong. That's it, a big old stupid monkey."
Their mean laughter filled the air as Lance picked Mariah up and carried her over his shoulder, attempting to reenact King Kong carrying actress Faye Ray. The group continued to talk shit about Darby, and someone mentioned that he might possibly be gay. A slow, cold rage filled Darby as he looked at the pink rose that was now crushed in his large fist. He should have known better. The nice girls weren't for him. Ginger had been right about Mariah, and he had turned his back on her for what he thought was a promising relationship. Except Mariah was not a nice girl. And it was time everyone knew. Lance Davis was pissed that he'd thrown 3 interceptions during tonight's game. His old man was going to be all over his ass tonight at dinner. Now Mariah had gone and disappeared, which really ticked him off because he was looking for her to blow him before he had to go home and hear his father's shit. Lance sulked as he and his friends walked through the school parking lot to what was considered the rich kids section. The only thing that brought him an inkling of joy right now was how Mariah planned to humiliate that baboon Darby in front of everyone for him. Lance could vividly recall Sullivan beating the shit out of him last year over that little bitch Ginger. He would never admit it out loud, but he was scared shitless of the big bastard, and had been secretly plotting revenge, trying to think of the best way possible to humiliate Darby without him knowing that he, Lance, was behind it. When he saw the way Darby's eyes followed Mariah in Spanish class, he knew he'd found his weakness. So Lance bribed Mariah with a new coach bag and a pair of Charles David shoes to seduce Darby into falling for her. The Davises were one of the wealthiest families in Whiskey Row, and Mariah's father worked for his family. Mr. and Mrs. Devereaux were a pair of social-climbing parasites who thought Lance would be their meal ticket to the Miramar Country Club. He let them think that while he fucked their daughter, and Mariah acted like butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. His friends kept talking and laughing as they got closer to their section of the parking lot, when they suddenly heard a high-pitched keening sound.
"What the fuck was that?"
one of his teammates asked, looking around nervously. But Lance ignored him as he heard a familiar voice shriek,
"Oh yes, fuck me harder!"
A chill slithered down his spine as he ran around the corner with his friends, hot on his heels, and an even larger crowd behind them coming to see what the commotion was all about. What Lance saw stopped him cold in his tracks. Mariah, bracing herself against the hood of his Ferrari, was getting fucked, doggy style, by Darby Sullivan.
"You like that, Mariah?"
Darby inquired coolly while he jackhammered into her, and Mariah moaned again as she greedily backed her little ass up to him, tears running down her face as she bit her lips and panted. It was like watching a train wreck, and Lance couldn't look away as he watched his nemesis fuck the little whore with skilled accuracy, pistoning in and out of Mariah and making her say things that she had never said in bed with Lance.
"I love it. Don't stop, Darby. Bang this pussy. Holy shit, your dick is so big,"
she yelped like a fucking chihuahua as Darby repeatedly pounded into her.
"I'm gonna come."
Darby laughed cruelly and fucked her even harder.
"Go ahead and come for me. You've earned it, sugar."
Mariah's leg shook uncontrollably as she fell forward onto the hood, and Darby pulled out of her, revealing his dick to everyone as he jerked off the condom and came all over the hood of Lance's car and Mariah's back.
"Jesus Christ, he's hung like my daddy's prize stallion,"
one of Lance's minions whispered enviously. The other guys chuckled nervously but quickly grew quiet as Lance shot them all an evil look. His hands were clenched into fists as he watched Darby zip up his pants and walk away from Mariah, who was still lying on Lance's car shaking, ass on full display for everyone to see. Darby didn't seem surprised to see the large crowd that was staring at him as he turned around. He'd deliberately orchestrated this event. His eyes met Lance's, and the shithead gulped nervously as the bigger boy surveyed him coolly and headed toward the group. Darby was a couple of steps away now, and Lance stepped back warily. His big hand shot out, and he ruffled Lance's hair as he walked by. As the crowd parted for him, Darby called out over his shoulder,
"Looks like you had 4 interceptions today. Don't let that stop you from getting baby girl them shoes and purse, though. Like I said, she earned them. Better luck next time, asshole."
He knew, Lance realized with horror. Somehow, Darby knew what he and Mariah had attempted to do to him.
Fuck, he was so dead.
Lance felt something cool touch his ear, and at the same time, someone tentatively tapped his shoulder.
"Dude, is that Sullivan's jizz in your hair?"
Chapter 1. Corinne, Mississippi. Dwayne Lister spat his tobacco chew into the bar sink with disgust as he watched his newest employee, Tucker Rydell, slowly wipe down the tables. He shook his head in irritation. The boy was slower than frozen molasses in everything he did, but he was free labor. If it wasn't for that fact, Dwayne would have gotten rid of the little retard on his first day and got himself one of them fucking wetbacks that hung out at the Home Depot in the city. But then he'd have to come out of pocket, unless Dwayne called immigration and arranged for them to pick the spick up for questioning when he was done working. Sometimes he wished he could go back in time and shoot that son of a bitch, Abe Lincoln, for abolishing slavery. Things today would be a whole lot simpler for Dwayne and his fellow brethren of WTBP if that was the case. But he'd taken a chance on the little nobody that no one in town took a second look at, sitting on the sidewalk outside of Slappy Joe's holding a sign that read, "We'll work for food," and writing so bad Dwayne's 3-year-old grandson could have done a better job. So out of the goodness of his God-fearing pure heart and the chance to keep money in his pocket, Dwayne had taken the help-wanted sign out of the bar's front window and magnanimously offered the retard a job. Tucker slowly agreed, and quicker than you could cheer, "White is right," Dwayne had him sign and date the worn cardboard sign and in a Slappy Joe's uniform washing dishes. The thing he liked most about the dimwit was that he didn't complain about anything. Not about cleaning the restrooms or after patrons who didn't realize they'd had too much of a good time until they were puking their guts out all over Slappy Joe's. But he couldn't afford for Tucker to be slow today, because today was a big day for Dwayne Lister. Today was the day that he would get to host the WTBP rally at his fine establishment. Yes, sir, today their fearless leader, Elgin Ray Calloway, was coming out of mourning and leaving his house for the first time in months to speak at today's sermon. Dwayne looked around and realized that Tucker had finished everything except wiping the damp tables. Trucks sporting the South's beloved Confederate flag were now starting to pull into Slappy Joe's parking lot. Quickly, Dwayne took a quick peek into the mirror behind the bar to make sure his mullet was perfectly gelled.
"I'm done, Mr. Lister. Was there anything else you needed?"
Tucker's voice was a slow, jumbled garble that made it very hard to decipher what he was saying, another reason people avoided him.
"I could stay and maybe help."
"Ah, you're good, Tucker. Go on ahead and pick up your bag of wings and fries, then get. I'll see you in the morning,"
Dwayne said impatiently, pushing him toward the kitchen.
"You can leave out the back way."
Tucker moved as fast as his limp would allow to the back of the house. As he entered the kitchen, Dwayne's son, Jimmy, who was also the fry cook, gave him a contemptuous look, as did the other 3 employees, Trick Perkins, a WTBP enforcer, and Sam and Levi Lister, Teddy's cousins, who were all sitting around, shooting the shit while Tucker had been busting his butt.
"Well, if it ain't Tuck the little fuck,"
Jimmy taunted around the cigarette dangling from the corner of his mouth, grinning as his audience snickered.
"Just kidding, buddy. Get your meal right here, boss man said. You can go."
"Thanks, Jimmy. Yeah, he said I was good to go,"
Tucker said with a goofy smile. He reached for the bag of food, but Jimmy quickly moved it out of his reach, and the trio snickered again.
"Well, now, hold on,"
Jimmy drawled with a sly look in his eyes.
"See, me and the fellas was just sitting here talking up a spell about you before you walked through them doors."
"Did I do something wrong?"
Tucker asked in confusion, looking at the other men.
"Nah, but we're a little put out that you didn't have to go through a Slappy Joe's initiation process. It's a time-honored tradition around these parts, and the 3 of us feel that Dwayne shouldn't have let you slide on account of you being retarded and all,"
Levi offered, barely able to keep a straight face. Sam chimed in with,
and frankly, I find that a bit offensive. You're supposed to be a member of the master race, but you act like some nigger looking for a handout. Are you pro-affirmative action or something?
Sorry, I don't know what you want from me.
Tucker apologized, and the words came out an even more garbled mess due to his nervousness. Trick got in his face and smiled unpleasantly, allowing Tucker to see the evil lurking within. He was a tall, bald-headed, heavily muscled young man whose specialty was preying on those physically weaker than him or in a position of less power. Covered in prison tattoos, he took his job seriously and got his job done by any means necessary. In prison, he'd raped his way to the top, not because he was a faggot, but because of the power it gave him over little bitches like the gimp freak in front of him. There was nothing more euphoric to him than a man's spirit leaving his body when you took his will away. That was the enjoyment he found in fucking. The breaking.
Would you like me to show you what I want from you, boy?
The other men eyed each other uneasily, all aware of Trick's sexual deviancy. They were all just having a good laugh at the retard's expense, but something in the hulking enforcer's stance didn't bode well for Tucker now that he was on Trick's radar.
Shit, leave him be, Trick. Get your food, Tucker, and get... Jimmy growled, giving him a warning look. Think I'll give Tucker your ride home,
Trick drawled as he gave the leaner men another once-over.
I'll be back before the festivities begin, y'all. Come on, boy.
Quickly, he grabbed Tucker's arm and dragged him towards the back door. Tucker threw the other man a pleading gaze, but they were too scared to intercede on his behalf. The only thing that kept them out of Trick's grasp was the fact that he worked for their families.
What in the hell is going on in here, morons?
Dwayne barked as he burst through the swinging doors. Automatically, Trick let Tucker go at the sight of his boss glaring at him.
Our damn guests are arriving, and y'all are standing around combing your fucking nut hairs. Nothing, D.L.,
Trick muttered, shooting the other men a baleful look.
We was just telling Tuck that we'd see him tomorrow. Ain't that right, fellas?
Yeah, Daddy, Tucker was just on his way out,
Jimmy said with relief and straightened up.
Come on, y'all, let's get this food served up.
Sorry, Uncle D.,
Sam and Levi mumbled. They hastened to get the trays of chicken wings and cold cuts out to the bar. With a last look of regret at Tucker, Trick licked his lips and walked away, causing the young man to give a shudder of relief as he headed out the back door.
Tuck!
Jimmy called, and he turned around again. The cook looked out into the dining room before walking up to him. Quickly, he pulled out a wad of crumpled cash and shoved it into Tucker's plastic bag. At the slower man's questioning gaze, Jimmy flushed but quickly explained himself.
Look, man, me and my cousin was just fucking with you. Take that money and get yourself out of town, boy. If you stay, nobody will help you now that you're on Trick's radar. You need to leave here. I don't know how much of what I'm saying you're understanding, but it ain't safe for you. Now take your fucked up leg and run as fast as you can, Tucker. Don't look back.
That's mighty kind of you, Jimmy,
Tucker said in his jumbled way.
I'll remember it. Thank you kindly.
He sat down in a corner of the back lot and slowly ate his cold chicken wings and soggy, overseasoned fries, watching as the trucks with big tires and Confederate flags hanging in the back pulled into the parking lot. There were laughing men dressed in solid white or solid red robes who twirled their matching hoods in their hands without a care in the world, as they were amongst friends and didn't have to hide their identity. There were families who came to support the cause, sporting shirts that had WTBP across the front. The crowd was all white, with crazy fanaticism dancing in their eyes. An air of excitement was in the air as they exchanged an intricate handshake of sorts and laughed and talked amongst themselves. Suddenly, a black hearse-like vehicle drove into Slappy Joe's parking lot. All commotion came to a halt, as a revered silence fell over the overzealous group. The driver, a short, wiry white man with a slick-backed, brown-haired mullet, hopped out and quickly opened the rear passenger door. A thin, pale, tall man with pinched features and dressed in a black suit emerged. His thinning brown hair flowed past his shoulders, and his dark eyes burned with his beliefs. He threw his hand up in a gesture that Tucker had seen the other folks exchange and bellowed in a deep, ringing voice,
"What power?"
The sentiment was returned as the crowd went wild and began to chant it repeatedly with him as they parted like the Red Sea and allowed him to lead them in. Only when the parking lot was empty did Tucker slowly rise to his feet. He tossed his trash into the dumpster before stepping behind it and going into the big bushes against the back wall. Slipping off his worn clothing and specially designed shoe, he quickly donned the all-black clothing, boots, and backpack he'd stashed this morning after finding out about Dwayne's shindig yesterday. He emerged from the bushes and took off at a smooth, silent run, cutting through the yards and back alleyways he'd familiarized himself with as he trudged through the oppressive town of Corinne and towards the big, dark house that sat atop a lone hill. After scaling the fence, he hit the ground running. As he proceeded at an incline, Tucker slipped the tranquilizer gun out of his cargo pants pocket. He could hear them coming to greet him and knew he would have to be quick. Tucker lunged at the lowest tree branch when all four growling Dobermans were 5 feet away. Barking, they snapped at his feet as he swung himself up and above them to land stealthily on the limb. Quickly, Tucker fired on his targets. 5 minutes later, his feet hit the ground with a soft thud, and he walked between the unconscious dogs.
Fucking show off.
Tucker smiled as his boss's voice came across the tiny microphone in his ear, clear as day.
Gotta bring something to the table. We can't all be beauty queens like you,
he replied and received an earful of chuckles, letting him know their surveillance team was in place as well.
Am I clear to do my thing, guys?
You're good to go, Tuck, the little fuck.
There was a snicker, and then his earpiece exploded with full-fledged laughter. Tucker himself chuckled good-naturedly, thinking of Trick's big ass trying to press up on him. Yeah, he had something for that motherfucker to press up on.
I was wondering when y'all were going to get around to that,
he said, walking up the steps of the rickety back porch and opening the battered screen door to pick the back door lock. Under his skillful ministrations, the door was opened in 5 seconds flat.
I'm in.
So, can you tell us what you've got so far?
Boss Man asked.
The group is called WTBP and is short for Whites Taking Back Power, small-minded racist folks who don't believe in our Constitution. Their faithful leader, Algin Ray Calloway, is giving a sermon tonight at Dwayne the Dipshit's Bar. In just a short time, you will be listening to a very encouraging speech on how to keep people of color and homosexuals in their place, as well as how to overthrow our government. I place bugs and cameras all over the place that should be going live in 5 minutes. You'll soon have faces of all the key players in this shitty hick town, Tuck muttered as he walked through the old musty house with a flashlight.
Christ, this place needs a good cleaning.
It almost seems like it's been abandoned rather than people have lived here for the last 40 years,
Tucker said disgustedly as he stared at a calendar in the kitchen. He took out his camera and snapped pictures of the remaining months on it.
Oh, if anyone is interested, Dwayne proudly divulged that he named Slappy Joe's after his mama, Joanna Raylene, because she could take a licking from his daddy and keep on ticking.
Sounds like a real fucking prince, doesn't he?
This time, curses filled his ear, and Tucker was more than inclined to agree with every one of them as he headed up the creaking stairs.
Boss, I gotta tell you, I haven't seen a clue yet that a woman, let alone a child, lived in this dark, miserable hellhole. No pictures of anybody.
Keep looking. I was informed, and you confirmed that this was Calloway's residence, the terse voice said. Meeting started, but I'm still listening to your intel.
The first bedroom was completely bare, as was the second. The third had a crib with no bedding and a few toys. The mattress, upon further inspection, was filthy and reeked to high heaven. Tucker held his breath and exited the room quickly. The last bedroom was the master, and it was clean and decorated as lavishly as the finest room in a brothel could offer, with scarlet-red velvet furniture and black silk sheets, along with red and black stripes covering the walls. There were pictures everywhere, and they disturbed the fuck out of Tucker as he quickly started snapping them with his phone and sending them to his boss. He could hear the dinging on the other end as Boss Man started to receive them. Tucker walked to the bathroom and found what he was looking for. Quickly, he pulled strands from a hairbrush and put them in a tiny plastic bag from his survival kit. Then he grabbed the comb and did the same thing with a separate bag. Carefully, he placed everything back the way he found it. Next, he went into the closet, and just like he'd been informed, there was the safe. Closing his eyes in concentration, he started to twist the combination and hoped to God it was the right one. Click. Whew, he muttered and opened it. Inside was a stack of worn journals and blueprints. Tucker studied them for a moment before pulling out his camera and snapping pics of each one. A beep sounded on his wristwatch. Time to go.
I'm grabbing the journals, but I've got some more shit that the FBI, DIA, and ATF are going to want to look at.
Jesus Christ,
was the blasphemy that burned his ears as he made his way out of the master bedroom.
If those pics are what I think they are.
Tucker exited the house the same way he entered. As he passed the sleeping dogs, he quickly pulled the darts out of them and continued to the gate. After coming out on the other side, he confirmed his mission was accomplished.
Activate all cameras, I'm clear.
Are you on your way in?
Boss Man asked.
I have one more thing to do, then I'll be in, and we can roll out of this shithole.
Tucker assured him, then paused.
Or do I have permission to take my time?
We don't have time to play. Keep it nice and neat,
Boss Man ordered.
You got it, Darby,
Tucker said cheerfully. The next morning, teenagers Rollo Hitson and Darnell Pruitt skipped high school to go fishing. They shared a pack of smokes and drank some beer they'd snuck out of last night's rally while watching Jackass videos on their phones. They were just about to cast their rods into the river when they caught sight of something large and pale floating their way. Curious, they watched as it got closer and closer, and when they realized what it was, Darnell shit his pants, and Rollo threw up all over himself. It was Trick Perkins' lifeless body. His eyes were wide open and forever frozen in horror. Judging from the bruising and knife cuts all over his body, he'd been worked over real good, but that wasn't the worst. Stuffed inside of his mouth was his castrated penis, and burned into his chest in crudely shaped letters was one word. Broken.
Chapter 2. Santorini, Greece. Avery Monroe sat in her lounge chair by the pool with her laptop. She was missing her little cupcake and thought she'd get in a Skype session with her and Noelle before she started her day. "Hi, babe," Noelle exclaimed as she came into view. "How's Greece?" "Very beautiful. I just arrived last night and thought I'd let you guys know I made it safely before going sightseeing. How are you doing?" "I'm hanging in there, just getting ready for lunch. You know your boo thing made it home today," Noelle said. "He's joining us for lunch. Would you like me to pass along a message for you?" "No, thank you. Where's Ruby?" Avery asked, ignoring the admonishing look Noelle gave her. "Nothing? Not even to go sliding on a waterless slip and slide?" she suggested helpfully, causing Avery to laugh. "Nope, not even that," she said as Noelle picked up her beautiful goddaughter. "There's my baby girl. Hi, Ruby."
"Hi, Auntie Avery,"
Ruby answered with a brilliant smile.
"I love you."
"Seriously, my heart just exploded," Avery exclaimed as she blew kisses to the screen and Ruby copied her. "I can't with her. How do you stand the cuteness?" "Oh, because she balances it very well with her temper," Noelle said fondly as Ruby blinked innocently at her mother. "Trust and believe when I tell you the devil slips something in her sippy cup from time to time, especially the closer we get to you-know-whose time." She finished with a downward glance at her belly. "Got it," Avery said with a sympathetic glance at Ruby. It would be an adjustment, but she was sure Noelle and Jack would manage it just fine. Not to mention all of the family that already hovered over the little princess that would help her adjust. "So, have you met anybody?" Noelle asked with interest.
"I've met people, but I'm not looking. This trip is just for me, no one else."
"I understand what you're saying, Avery. I just don't want you to be closed off to love completely, okay?"
"I hear you. But unless love gets right up in my face and is like, I am here for you, then I'm not trying to hear it," Avery declared obstinately.
"Hey, Ave, I've got to go. If I'm not mistaken, Darby's here." Noelle's expression turned innocent.
"Unless you want to stick around and say hi."
"No, I have to go as well. I'm doing a group tour today, and they're probably gathering downstairs right now. Love you guys." Avery closed the laptop with a pounding heart before her bestie could say goodbye.
"Do not think about him," she whispered as she got up and hurried back inside her villa to get ready for her tour.
"Huh. Not think of the sexiest, kindest, caring man she knew." It was way easier said than done. Darby Sullivan was dog-ass tired as he dragged himself up the steps of his older brother Jack's house. He'd just returned from Mississippi an hour ago, after making sure the raids went smoothly. When Darby first approached the government agencies with information, he'd been grilled extensively by federal agents and the DA of that state. They'd been unhappy with his sting operation, but he'd handed them a veritable goldmine of information to make them all look good if they proceeded carefully with it. The wonderful aromas of his sister-in-law Noelle's cooking assailed his nose, and Darby shook his head in disbelief.
She was on the verge of giving birth and was driving Jack crazy because she wouldn't relax. Happily married, just shy of 2 years. This was...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?